Welcome to In My Backyard, an open conversation about children and mental health. We all know a child who's struggling, whether that child tells us or not. In this podcast, we speak with experts on the many factors of emotional distress in children, how to address those factors, and how to create a community where all children can be healthy and happy. This podcast is made possible through generous donations from supporters and listeners like you. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Your host is Tricia Costales, CEO of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California.
I'm Tricia Costales, your host of In My Backyard. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the chief executive officer of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency serving 3,500 children and families every year. Today's podcast will be a little different from our usual format, as we have the fourth of our stories episodes. In this one, we will have a conversation with Jacoby Mitchell, a young man who's a witness to and survivor of gun violence. This is a follow-up conversation from our last episode, where we learned about the dynamics of mass shooters. Today, we will get the victim and survivor perspective. As we learned in the last episode, the Center for Disease Control reports that 48,830 people died from gun-related injuries in the United States in 2021, the last year for which data is available. These horrific statistics only tell part of the story. They don't count people who are shot but survive, and they don't count the witnesses to the gun violence, who survive but are left forever changed by the experience. Jacoby Mitchell, along with his siblings, witnessed the shooting of his mother when he was only 9 years old. 10 years later, he's a young man, a student at Clemson University, a survivor fellow with Everytown Survivor Network, and a volunteer with Students Demand Action. We are very lucky to have him here with us today. Welcome, Jacoby. I am so honored to have you here with us today. We hadn't met before now, so for all of our benefit, mine and our listeners, would you please say a few words about yourself?
So I am Jacoby Mitchell. I am a gun violence survivor. I am a sophomore now at Clemson University studying biological science to pursue medical school to become a surgeon. I am the second oldest of six siblings on my mom's side, and I'm the second oldest of four siblings on my dad's side. So if you do the math, you'll know how many siblings I have. I am from Charleston, South Carolina. I enjoy living in Charleston, South Carolina, and I love to travel. My favorite thing is to travel, and my favorite place that I want to travel to is Bora Bora.
Nice. Nice. That's actually on my bucket list, too. And you do have, there's a whole posse of Mitchells, it sounds
yes,
like.
A lot.
Very nice. Are you all right if we dive right in?
Yes.
And I mean, let's just start with the elephant in the room and ask you to tell us your story, the story of what happened to your family that day 10 years ago.
Yes. So on May 24, 2014, a couple of days, just 3 days after my brother's first birthday, my mom was shot in the face by my brother's dad in front of us. That day was a really tough day. You know, I would have never thought to experience, or, you know, not just me thinking experience, but like, you know, no one would ever want to experience that tragedy that, you know, we were able, that we saw or we experienced. You know, she was headed to work, and it was an abusive relationship. Let's start there. It was a very abusive relationship, but it wasn't until she finally decided to take the initiative to just leave, because she knew that it wasn't healthy for us to experience, nor was it healthy for her to as well, nor was it safe. So she finally decided to leave, and it was an argument transpired the day before. And the day of, as my mom was walking down the stairs, because at the time we were living in an apartment complex, as she was walking down the stairs, headed to work, he came from out under the stairs and pointed a gun to her. When she went to go swipe away, he pulled the trigger and it hit her in the nose, nearly missing her brain. And then when he saw that she was still alive, he put the gun back to her head and was like, you know, I didn't kill you then, but I am going to do it now. But it took us screaming, like saying, hey, please don't kill our mom or anything like that. And he took the gun from her head and he walked away. That day was a really tough day. You know, no one in my family really knew that, you know, she was in an abusive relationship. No one never really knew what was going on. So they just heard that, you know, my mom was shot. And that day was pretty tough, you know, just, you know, all the officers, the EMS, you know, seeing your mom just, you know, dripping blood from her face, and hearing your siblings cry and things like that. It was very tough. It was very challenging to definitely experience.
Jacoby, did you see this as well as hear this? Like, did you witness all this unfolding? Like, yes. What was...
We witnessed it all in front of our eyes. It was definitely a tough thing to experience, you know, to really experience, to witness that. You know, it was already enough witnessing your mom be hands be put on, but then it was definitely a different type of, you know, pain and hurt and being scared when you experience your mom getting shot.
I can't imagine. And, you know, my first thought is just the horror, but mm-hmm. I have to say my brain also went right to what an amazing young man you are to have this experience. And now you're doing pre-med in college. So I am definitely eager to hear about your journey. But my first thought is, you know, what an awful, awful thing for a family to go through. For you were 9, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was 9. Yes.
How many of your siblings were there with you? Did they all witness this?
All my siblings. It was each and every one of us.
Wow.
Yes. Wow. The one that my mom's birth was the one that was there. It was my older sister, me, my brother, my other sister, and my 1-year-old brother at the time.
I can't imagine going through this as a small child. And, you know, it also triggers my mom feelings. I can't imagine enduring this as a mom. And her own fear, but also her fear for all of you. And could you tell us a little bit what that immediate aftermath was like? I'm sure, you know, police and ambulances and hospitals and who cared for you and like what happened after this?
So right after that, it took my mom to the hospital to, you know, treat her. And we went with our aunt. And after that, I would definitely say it was something to still process, because I remember that day, the day of, we had an event at our church and we went to our church event and I wasn't strong enough to be there, honestly. I remember crying in the bathroom and my cousin, he just came in and, you know, he just hugged me. And I told him it's a scare thing. And it's not only that, you know, due to the fact that, you know, the person who shot my mom was still on the run, you know, safety became a big concern for me and my family. Like, okay, is he going to come back? Is he going to hurt? Since he hurt my mom, but she's still alive, will he come back and hurt her again? Will he hurt us? What can happen? So safety was a big thing. And I remember, you know, just from that day on, it felt like our life was just kind of like going downhill, because after that, you know, we lost our place because of, you know, the apartment complex that we were in. You know, they kicked us out and it felt like we were just kind of hitting rock bottom, you know, having to stay with someone and trying to, you know, not only narrow through the tragedy that happened, but also navigate trying to, you know, build everything that you already built, but it came down. Now trying to build that back up, it was definitely tough, you know, especially, you know, going a couple months without having a home, you know, going from house to house and things like that. It was a really tough place. And it was very challenging. You know, there was days where, you know, as siblings, we, you know, experienced our mom crying, because it was like, you know, going, being in this and having to start over but not only having to start over by yourself, but with your kids, and they having to experience all this. You know, there's some, you know, as mothers, their goal is to, you guys' goal is to protect us and to cover us and to nurture us and to provide in every way possible that you can. And, you know, going through all of that was, it was really stressful. It was really stressful on her end. But I would say her road to recovery was great. You know, if when you look at her right now, you can't tell that she got shot at all. Not one scar is on her face. She has like a little mark, but you would have to be looking real, real close to actually see. But other than that, like you can't tell, you know, that she got shot. And just to see how she was able to turn her story into her passion is, you know, go around sharing her story, helping young other mothers who have been in an abusive relationship, you know, fighting for the rights of gun violence to be changed, and, you know, for her to be in a place where she's pouring into others and helping others heal as she's on her healing journey as well, and healing from other things. You know, I would definitely say it's been an inspiration for me to go out and to continue to share my story, because when I look at the fact that I can see that my mom is able to share her story despite all the challenges that she's been through, despite hitting rock bottom, despite starting back over, to see that she gives her all into others and pour her all into others to bring change, to uplift people, to want to see people do their very best, it pushes me to go out and to share my story and say, if my mom can do it and she went through the toughest time of her life, then I can do it too as well.
I'm having a hard time getting my head around the fact that you were evicted after this.
Yes.
So that you had housing security on top of the trauma of this experience. That I'm having a really hard time getting my brain around that.
We had 30 days to be out of our place. And this, you know, they told her a couple of days after she got shot. Mind you, he was still on the run too as well. So
yes. Was he caught eventually?
He was caught 30 days after the event.
3 days?
30 days. So like a
30
month.
30 days. After. Wow. Yes. Wow. Was there a trial and all of that? Did you have to participate in that?
Yes. The trial was a process. It actually took 3 years in order for us to go to trial.
What?
Yes. Yes. It took 3 years until it was time for us to go to trial. And he only got 10 years, but technically, since he already was in prison for 3 years, he only had to serve 7 more. So he actually gets out next year.
How does that, I don't even know how to ask this. What does that feel like? How does that impact your sense of safety?
You know, when we were in the court, I'm going to answer that question. I'm going to stop by just going a little back. When we were in the court, it was, to see him, it was very challenging, you know, to get on that stand and to talk and to share and to also listen to the audio of the recording, because I was the one who called 911 when it happened, you know. So I didn't I didn't cry until a few hours after it happened. My main concern was being strong for my siblings and being strong for my mom, you know, because my older sister was already going through her emotions. So I was just like, someone has to be the one that can be strong in this, you know, in this time period. But being on that stand and actually, you know, telling what happened, and then hearing him talk and not tell the truth at all, and then for them to say, okay, we're going to only give them 10 years because she didn't die. That was a tough thing to actually see, or actually to hear me, I mean, because I don't think that whether someone was alive or not, you know, this was attempted murder. She could have lost her life, you know, but because she didn't lose her life, you know, you're saying that you're going to give someone 10 years. Well, clearly, you're not just looking at the fact that she got shot, but you're looking at the fact that she got shot in front of the kids. Her kids had to experience this, you know. The fear of their safety, not only that, but her being in an abusive relationship abusive relationship with him. So, you know, it's hearing that, okay, he only has to serve 7 more. At first I was thinking, because since I was young and being, I was like, okay, 7 years, that's not long. But as I'm older now, and as I grow older now, I realize that that's not really that long, because 7 years, it flew by fast. And so to see, like, you know, to hear that, you know, it gets out next year. When it comes to safety, I definitely have, you know, been, you know, a little worried about safety. But because, you know, because of my faith in God, I believe that he will cover us and he'll protect us from all evil. And, you know, at the end of the day, I know that he has a restraining order, so he's not allowed to come. He don't know where we're at. But, you know, there's days where I kind of think, like, as time and time comes closer, I'm still praying for, you know, our safety and thinking, like, okay, what if he doesn't do it to us? But what if he does it to his next victim? What if they don't make it alive? You know, what would you say then? You know, because I'm just not worried about just the safety of my family, but I'm worried about the safety of the next person he may pursue. What happened if he really hurt this person? You know, what does that family have to do then? They have to grieve the loss of their loved one. You know, thank God that my mom will still be able to, it's still here, still here alive. But I couldn't even imagine if she was not here. You know, that's something my siblings and I would have to live on for the rest of our life, trying to grieve the loss of our mom. But thankfully, she survived, you know. But I'm just thinking about the next victim.
I want to say, because you said, what if he really hurts the next one? For the record, I want to say he really did hurt you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're thank goodness was not loss of life, but that he still really hurt all of you guys. So I understand your fear completely. You know, you talked about, you know, that you were housing insecure, your mom was in the hospital, you're staying with your auntie, you know, but then at the same time, you're at church that same day, like moving on, like everything's normal to some degree. Like, how do you reconcile all of that? Like, what returned to normal and what didn't for you?
What returned to normal, what didn't? I would say nothing really returned to normal. I can say that my life changed a lot because this happened on the weekend. We were back in school on that Monday. This was all over Li-Fi News. Friends had knew about it. Like, you know, our neighborhood had knew about it. So going to school, my teachers had knew about it. So going to school and, you know, having, you know, being asked questions, you know, it was challenging. And then not only that, now DSS was now involved into our business. So now they were coming to the school. So, you know, being pulled inside the principal office and being questioned, you know, does your mom keep you safe? Or, you know, and just having to answer a lot of questions. It was very challenging, I would say. You know, I was still sad, you know, but being in school, it was hard to be in school that week, that day, you know, let alone for the rest of that year. Because it was very challenging to having to explain it, to talk about, like, you know, what happened, let alone, not for me, it was not learning how to not answer certain questions that was being asked. Because there were certain questions that was being asked by friends and by teachers that I didn't have the strength to answer. You know, I was sad. I couldn't answer it. You know, all I could say was my mom was shot. And I was in school trying not to cry. I was in school holding it in because I didn't want to, you know, release it because I didn't want other people to see me at my weakest.
And you were nine. I mean, you were really young.
I was
like,
very
nine's
young.
A baby. So to be sort of thrust back into the school environment as if nothing happened, as if, you know, go on like normal, just go back to school. I can imagine that's excruciating, especially because he was still not arrested.
Right. We were still in school and he was still on the run. So that was even scarier. And mind you, he already knew where we were going to school at too, so as well.
Of course, he knew where to find you if he wanted to, right? Mm-hmm. You know, here you are today, 10 years later, a college sophomore, articulate as heck. How do you think this experience has informed and impacted your life today? Like, how has it become a part of who you are?
I would say it was a journey. It was a long journey. Because after my mom got shot, we were in counseling, and it didn't really help. We were young, so we didn't really know. We already experienced other series of events, but it was being in that therapy that, you know, didn't really help as much. But it took a few years down the line, me not realizing that I had triggering moments, or there were certain things that would trigger that pain from the past. And it was a long journey, and it's still going to be a journey. You know, I didn't really, my mom didn't put us into therapy one-on-one again until my sophomore year of high school. And I remember being in therapy that day, you know, I was just talking about like my family, but I never really talked about myself, you know, and I was very scared to open up. But as I continue on to therapy, as I continue on my healing journey, I realized the importance of, we all have a story to tell. You know, we've all faced some type of challenging moment or some type of tragedy that has impacted us. But can we turn that pain into our purpose? You know, can we make that our assignment to actually move, heal past it or heal through it, and to, you know, help others who may have experienced the same thing that we've experienced? And, you know, I never realized that I can help other people experience, you know, the help other people who've experienced the tragedy of gun violence, just like how I have. You know, I can be able to tell anything that I face and help other people and let teach them how I may have gotten through it, which can probably help them, you know, because just like I may have done certain things that helped me heal past, you know, this thing that I've been through, that person may need that type of advice, you know, or that person can help me too as well. So, you know, when it comes to the impact of my life, I will say, you know, it definitely is a, you know, journey, but I will say for the most part, it really helps me press on into my assignment to really bring it forth, the change, and to really bring forth those who have suffered or experienced challenging moments in their lives where they felt like, you know, this is all that this, they have nothing else, you know, they want to give up. Because going through that, losing, you know, technically being homeless, if we're being for real, and, you know, having to like struggle to get back on your feet, you know, that was tough for my mom and for my siblings and I. That was a tough thing to, you know, to experience, and to let alone us still going to school. No one ever knew what we were going through after. They just thought that, okay, after mommy, after she got shot, that, you know, she lost everything, but, you know, now everything will be better. They didn't know the days that as a family, we cried, you know, we wept because we were like, oh my gosh, like, what's going to happen now? There were days where we went to school with a smile on our face, and our teachers would be like, you know, you have the best kids ever, and I just know that you guys have a good lifestyle. But little did they know that outside of school was very, very tough for us. And so just using these experiences to really, you know, heal through it, to really take lessons out of it, and to help other, definitely is something that I can definitely say has been very impactful when it comes to my life.
Jacoby, bear in mind, I am a therapist, so I want to ask a therapy question. And you, I also want to give you total grace to say, Trisha, I don't want to answer that question, okay? But I've heard you talk about, you know, you made the phone call. You held it together as this scared, horrified 9-year-old. You made the phone call. You talked about how, you know, proud you are of your mom and wanting your mom to be okay. And you talk about this impacts you because you want to speak about it, because you want to help the next people down the road. And sadly, we know there will be more mm-hmm. people down the road. What about you? In that conversation, that is so funny. Jacoby.
The fact that you asked me that question was the same question my therapist asked me when we talked.
We're a tribe.
Like, when it was like, you know, I didn't realize that I got so used to putting other people's feelings before mine that I didn't take time to care, like, to look into or to, you know, look into Jacoby's feelings or Jacoby's emotion. And that was something that we, as my siblings and I, we all learned from our mom, because we were used to our mom always putting other people before her. Or, you know, anytime she was going through something, she saw someone else going through something, she would put her stuff to the side and to help that person. And it was kind of like, you know, it's a gift and a curse, because yes, you want to help that person, but you have to know the importance of how much it is to also pour into yourself, to also fill your cup up too as well. And, you know, in that moment, I didn't realize that I was unintentionally setting myself up for the next couple of years up until therapy, when I got to therapy sophomore year, that I was setting myself up to now putting other people before me or to doing other things for other people, that I put my stuff last to help tend to the needs of other people. And then be upset if I felt like no one was really hearing. And so when I learned that I was unintentionally doing that, you know, I had to get to a place where it's like, you know, I have to find a balance. I can help this person, but I have to make sure I am good first in order for me to fully help this person. Because if I'm empty, I can't pour from an empty cup. My cup will have to be filled. So I didn't, you know, realize at a young age that I didn't realize that I started at a young age, now setting the, you know, the path of putting other people's feelings before mine and helping other people in their emotions and not helping much and just bottle it in and keep it inside. And it's a very unhealthy thing to do. And going through that journey, I saw, you know, the things that I would have done, the things that I did, which I knew that was unhealthy because, you know, I was too busy bottling it in. And it's not a good thing at all. You know, never supposed to just keep your emotions in. If you're feeling sad, express that. If you want to cry, cry. It's okay to cry. If you're feeling sad, it's okay to feel sad. You know, it's just not okay just to stay there. But we have emotions, we have feelings. So we're able to go through those emotions, go through those feelings. But what can we do to now push forward, to walk into the light?
You know, I read in your blog or article, I'm not sure, that it actually took you a long time to understand that you were a victim of gun violence. You know, being a witness to it, that made you a victim as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So this happened a year ago. It was when I was graduating high school. Well, actually 2 years ago now, I just thought about that. When I was graduating high school, my mom purchased me an orange cord, and she purchased it with me. And I told, she was like, "Oh, this is a gun violence cord for you." And I was like, okay, so I wore it at my graduation, but she ended up receiving an email, or I think it was me. I ended up receiving a call from Everytown asking me to come to the Don't Look Away rally that was taking place in June. And I told my mom about it, and she was like, do it. She was like, go up there, you will love it. Because at the time, she was already a part of Everytown and Moms Demand. And so I went up there, and I thought that this event was only for gun violence survivors, which means I thought in order to be a gun violence survivor that you had to have been the person to have been shot. I didn't know that you are considered a gun violence survivor if you've experienced it, if you've seen it, you know, if you've been in the same place, doesn't matter what it is. If it happened around you, you are too. Whether it was your cousin, whether it was your family, doesn't matter, you are one too. And I remember having a conversation with a friend that I just met that day, and they were telling me that they experienced gun violence in their school. And they're like, I'm a gun violence survivor. And I was like, wait, so does that make me a gun violence survivor experience, you know, seeing my mom get shot? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. Now, all this time, you know, I always just thought that my mom was the only one in the household, you know, because it happened to her. But I didn't know that now that makes me a gun violence survivor. It makes my siblings one. It makes my families one. So I didn't know about that at all, you know, until I went to the Don't Look Away rally that happened in June of 2022. And once I finally came to that realization that I was like, okay, so now I have the authority to share my experience with it, to tell my experience with it, and to also be in a room with other people, or to be at a rally as well with other people who have experienced it, who's fighting for the change, and to hear other people's story and how they were able to heal through it and how they were able to turn this and make it their passion to share their story and to bring change. That truly, that was like the icing on the cake for me, honestly.
Almost like sort of accepting that was empowering.
Yes, it was. Like my life changed forever that day, you know? My life changed forever that day. And the thing is, I was talking to people who I just met, telling my story. But mind you, I never really talked to my friends about it. My best friend knew, two of my best friends knew. But like my senior year, none of my friends knew that my mom, because I ended up switching schools, you know, after it happened. But none of my friends really knew that my mom was shot. And so I told them, I was like, yeah, my mom was shot. And they looked at me because it was like, this happened when I was 9 years old in elementary school. Then I switched schools to another elementary school, then went to middle school. And I was friends with those friends since middle school. So they didn't knew until I pulled up the article and they were like, I never knew this. Like, I wow. never knew this at all. But like, you know, to share my story and to talk about it with other people who have experienced, it was very empowerful. Like when I say my life changed that day forever, I came back home a new person.
Well, you had license finally to talk about it, right?
Right.
And to own it. And I can imagine that that would be really powerful. Are there things that trigger you?
I would definitely say here in Charleston, yes. Because being in Charleston, you know, we have a lot of gun violence taking place. And my mom actually works with the youth advocate program here in Charleston. So she is constantly working when it comes to taking kids off the streets, you know, being active, you know, helping those who are involved in, like, you know, gang related things and trying to help them, you know, change their life around, become, you know, change a different path, you know, because they don't have to go down that path. And so when I'm constantly looking at the articles about, you know, shootings that is taking place, you know, when I see certain things, you know, because I saw an abusive man, you know, when I hear a, you know, a man talking aggressively or, you know, talking to a female a certain way, that stuff fears me. Cause I'm just thinking like, okay, if he put his hands on you, eventually at some point, you never know what he can do. Because I just knew from my experience, seeing my mom get hit on, we would have never thought that he would have shot her, but he ended up doing it. So if that person is able to put hands on you, imagine what they can do. So that stuff is kind of triggering when I see certain things, or like just violence in general, you know, when it comes to like, you know, fighting and things like that, that stuff triggers me. Cause I'm just thinking like, oh my gosh, you don't know what can happen. And I remember being in high school, you know, our senior year was full of, you know, it was a good school. It was a very good school, but our senior year, a lot of fights took place. And I just remember saying, like, I'm scared. You know, our safety means a lot because, you know, it started on social media and then threats started being made. And it wasn't just violence, but it was more like, you know, hurting someone, killing someone. And so that stuff was kind of scary going to school because just like, you don't know what can happen. And then also like my senior year, my friend passed away due to gun violence. You know, he was shot. Yeah, my friend and my sister's best friend, both of them passed away. They were together and they were shot and killed. And so that was another, you know, situation to get through because it was a very, you know, we were very good friends with these two people, you know, very respectful, very nice. And it was just wrong place, wrong time. And they lost their life tragically. So that was another triggering moment.
Of course. I can't imagine to to experience that again with someone who is dear to you. You know, seems like, and it feels like it's a uniquely American experience too, that we can't go a day without hearing or reading about gun violence. And I know it impacts me, and I am not by any means a gun violence survivor. You know, how does that sort of onslaught of continual violence and tragedies like that, how does that impact you? Does it make you mad? Does it, like, what's, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So how does that?
I would say it makes me mad when I hear that there's no justice for the victim. That's what makes me very mad. I would say it makes me mad when it's kind of like seeing another person lose their life. And it also makes me sad because it frustrates me for the person that takes that person's life away, you know, because I'm just thinking like, I want us to be, you know, let's think logically. When this person loses their life, you're not only taking that person's life, but you're taking that person's from their loved one. You know, a person have lost a sister, brother, aunt, uncle, son, daughter, husband, wife, colleague, doesn't matter. Like, you took their whole entire life. And now that the family is on a journey, because it's not a season of grieving, it's a journey of grieving until they pass away, you know? And so it's like, it come in grievement, it comes in waves. You know, one day you could be fine, and then the next day you can just be totally down. And so it's just like, you know, when you take someone's life away, you have to now realize that you are leaving the family stuck. You are taking a piece of someone from another one, you know? And now this person, now this person's family member had to now live on for the rest of their life, that they are no longer here. And for some people, it's like, now it's happening where it's getting young. It's like the age, you know, what people take in other people's life is getting younger and younger. So now it's like you're taking away people from their kids, from their families. And so it definitely makes me frustrated, because I'm just like, you know, I'm definitely praying that our world gets into a better place. But when you keep seeing these things happening over and over and over again, it's like, days is just like, when can we be adults and sit down and have a conversation? You know, it's not a bad thing to own up to what you did, to take, hold yourself accountable, to apologize for how you made that person feel. Because regardless of that wasn't your intentions, that's how that person felt. So that means that their emotions and their feelings are valid, you know? But instead of, you know, sitting down and having a mature conversation, you know, you will want to take that person's life over a disagreement, over an argument, you know?
What made you want to come here today to share your story? It's a brave thing to do.
For me, it's coming to be the voice. You know, I've always said that no matter what, I've always wanted to help people. I've always had that, you know, passion in me since I was a little boy. I've always told my mom, I want to travel the world. I want to walk on stage. And I just want to help people in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know what it was. Now, did I know what's going to be about this? No, I did not. But, you know, being a voice of reason for my community, for my family, for the world, for those who are so scared to actually get out there and to share their story, to speak and to help. I want to stand in the gap for those who are in their house still grieving and who is afraid to come out their house to talk. I want to stand in the gap for those who don't know what to say. You know, I want to stand in the gap for those who have no words at all, who are afraid to go out and basically help in the community because they fear that if someone sees them helping, it may cause some type of issue. But for me to help anyone on their healing journey, because I start to see the evidence of what it does to me and what it's still doing to me of truly healing, of truly telling my story, of truly helping other people know, hey, I know what you've been through. I understand how it feels, but let me tell you, you do not have to stay stuck, because our challenges it's not meant for us to stay there and feel defeated. But I feel like our challenges causes us, it brings another strength. It brings another type of, it unlocks another type of strength that we didn't know we had, where we can go out and go and express and share and to pour into others. And so coming here today and, you know, being that voice of reason for someone out there who can be able to hear my voice, to see how I've healed through it, because I'm still healing. I'm not saying I haven't healed over it, but I'm still healing, because it's going to be a journey for the rest of my life. You know, to want someone to hear how I've healed through it, you know, and for them to be able to look and be like, you know what, I want to do exactly what he's doing. I want to take the step into actually healing. It's what brings me here today, you know, because I feel like we need more voices in our community, in our world, to let people know that it's okay to go to therapy, you know? It's okay to turn your pain into your purpose and make it your assignment and your passion to help bring change.
Is that what remaining a part of Every Town and Students Demand Action means to you? Is that, I mean, I know you said you encountered them a year ago, but mm-hmm. I know you're active there now. So mm-hmm. is that what, I mean, that's not a club anyone wants to have the credentials to join, by the way, but if you do have those credentials as a survivor, you know, is that what being a part of those organizations means to you? It's a yes. voice?
So Every Town and Students Demand, oh my gosh, it is definitely great, you know, to have a voice, because I feel like they teach us and prepare us and train us and help build the confidence to go out there and to just talk, you know. It's good to actually hear that, you know, we're not going to always have all the answers, We're not going to know how to answer every question. But to have that support system and truly connecting with others who have, you know, experienced the same thing. And even for some, they may have not experienced it, but this is something so dear and near to their heart that they're like, okay, I want to be a part of this, you know? And so, yes, I would definitely say that, because I would say I have such a great support system where we support each other. You know, we connect with one another all over the world, because it's just not one group, one place, but it's from people from all over. And to, you know, us, when we get together, we talk and have the support and be like, listen, you know, your mental is important to us. So if you can't do it today, that is totally fine. You know, or, you know, to gain that sense of relationship, you know, life lasting, long relationship. You know, I can say we're a family, you know, it goes beyond just friends, but I say that we are a family that help each other to build each other up, to actually go out there, to walk in those streets and to demand change.
You know, we've talked a little bit about your mental health treatment, and, you know, the first round didn't really, wasn't terribly helpful, but it sounds like it helped once the spotlight was turned on you in therapy and what you were feeling and what you were experiencing. You know, are there things, and correct me if I'm wrong about that, but, you know, are there things you wish mental health professionals understood about the experience of other gun violence survivors? I can tell you at the Guidance Center, we have a number of them. We serve very disenfranchised communities. So there's quite a bit of gun violence where our children live. So what would you say to mental health professionals? What should we understand about the journey of a gun violence survivor?
So I'm going to backtrack just a little bit.
Please.
So after, you know, getting, after the experience, my mom gets shot, they put us into family therapy. I forgot how long, I think it was like 3 to 6 months, if I'm not mistaken, could be long. But I would say in those 3 to 6 months, it didn't really help us as much. You know, I don't think that, you know, they were aware we were young kids experiences. So we don't know how we're feeling really. We just know that our mom got shot. And it's not a thing where it should only be 3 to 6 months. I think it's just something that should be longer, because as we grow older, we start to now develop and understand what we were feeling in that moment, but we start to unlock how it really felt, you know? Or, you know, we start to experience more things that trigger, or is a triggering moment for us to cause us to reflect back on what happened. So being in there for that 3 and 3 months, I would say definitely after, like, you know, immediately after my mom got shot, it didn't really help us at all. It was more like, okay, you guys got shot. Your mom's here. Your mom got shot. She's here alive. And that was it. And we got sent away. We was like, okay, we're good. They thought that we were good. But it wasn't until my mom, as we grew older, my mom became very aware that, okay, I don't want to send you guys out in this world broken. I want to send you guys out in this world healed, or at least healing. And putting my siblings and I in therapy my sophomore year of high school, when we were able to talk about it with our therapist, since we all have separate therapists, we were able to talk about it one-on-one. We came to realize that we did not know that as we grow older, there was things that, you know, we started to, that were triggering moments for us. And something that I want, you know, them to, you know, mental health to know is that, you know, since now a lot of it's happening to people, and it's at a young age, especially for siblings are experiencing their, like, you know, parents going through it, you know, definitely give that person time, you know, to open up, because we walked into there and was expected to immediately open up. And this was something new to us. But if it was something like, okay, like, you know, giving us time, formulating that relationship, making us feel comfortable to talk, then we will be able to open up more. And that's something that my therapist now did in my sophomore year when I went to her. You know, she didn't automatically tell me about your story, tell me what happened. She formulated a relationship where, you know, I was able to now look at it like, you know, talking to my siblings or talking to a family or talking to a friend. Then I started to open up more. Then I started to tell her, you know, my experience with it. So I think, you know, starting off by actually getting to allowing that person to feel comfortable, you know, not just expecting them to automatically open up, but formulating that relationship and that bond. So then when they can feel comfortable opening up, it helps. It would definitely help, because as someone who was able to do it, I felt more comfortable formulating that relationship with my therapist, then opening up and then telling her, you know, my feelings, my triggers, my emotions are, you know, what I've experienced, and talking about it rather than just walking in the first meeting and then just saying, okay, tell me what happened. And
so, like, don't skip that rapport building and that relationship building. That foundation has to be there first.
Right, right. Because when we first went, we didn't have that foundation. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, okay, these things are going to be kept between these walls. But it was like, okay, well, who to trust? Because at the time, DSS was still involved in our business. So we were just thinking like, no, we don't really want to talk to you because we have a feeling that things are, and then ours, it was also reported to as well. So it was also, yeah, like our conversation recorded. And it was kind of like, okay, well, DSS was recording our conversation too as well. So it was like, you don't know, we don't know who really to trust at this point. So right now we are not going to open up. But being in there now, we were able to now open up and to, you know, start that, have that foundation of building a relationship, then expressing how we felt and talking about it. Now we're in a place where we're healing through it.
So what's next for you? College, med school, I guess. But like, what's your big vision?
Oh my God. So my vision is, I have a lot. I refer to myself that I just turned 20 a couple days ago. So
happy birthday.
Thank you. So I have a lot before I turn the age of 25. I'm giving myself 5 years to want to accomplish all these things. So my vision, my goal is to now, my goal within the next 5 years is at least be traveling, speaking on stage in front of, in an arena, speaking in front of a lot of people, telling my story, of course, but helping people heal, giving them the tools that was given to me to help me, I want to give to other people. No, of course I'll be graduating in the next 2 years. It's something that I cannot even, like, I'm just like, time is just flying by quick. And so, like, hopefully doing that, being in medical school and also traveling to share my story and to speak, that is definitely the vision and the goal that I have, that I see myself doing by 25. Now, it will be a lot being in medical school, but I know that I am equipped. I know God has equipped me to do it, and I know that He will definitely carry me through.
I find it very striking that with all these life experiences, your wish in the end is med school, and you have really taken on that mantle of healer, haven't you?
Yes.
You know, Jacoby, every one of our episodes, it's a rule with me. I end them on a note of hope. I believe in hope, and hope gets us through. You have been through so much. Still accomplishing so much, like in college, looking to med school. What gives you the hope as you continue to move on to the next stages of your life? What are the bright sides for you?
Oh, what gives me hope? What gives me hope is when I see someone able to say that they need help, you know? When I see someone saying that I am broken and I've experienced so much, I want help. And that gives me hope because I'm just thinking, like, you know, honestly, the more that we have people be able to acknowledge that they want help and they want to become better people, that really gives me hope because that's saying that we're moving in the step of the right direction. Because it starts off with ourselves, you know, like going back to what we said earlier, it starts off with you. So when you're able to acknowledge you, when you're able to acknowledge yourself and say that, okay, I see a problem, I need to fix it. That gives me hope because then that makes me now realize that you are now, you're making yourself, it's self-awareness. It's now saying that, okay, I need to do better. I want to be better, you know? And so I feel like the more our generation, the more our world turns to actually being able to start off with self and to be able to heal and to definitely be able to overcome the traumas, I feel like that will make our world go into a better place and we will all become to be able to be unified and there won't be no more division really. Now, technically there will always be division because you always have someone with a different opinion. But I definitely will say the more and more people see other people, you know, wanting to take that step to actually become better, then that person will, because we all have some type of influence in our life, whether it's a thing, whether it's someone, doesn't matter what it is. You know, when you see that someone who you may look up to saying that, okay, I want to become a better person, then you'll start to say, okay, if that person can do it, I can do it. So that definitely was gives me hope.
I have to say that your generation gives me hope. It really does. I think your generation's remarkable. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your story with us today. I am so inspired and impressed by you. I wish I could hug you. I'll give you a Zoom hug. And I just go rock the world, Jacoby, and make sure you take care of yourself in the process.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It's my position that by shining a light on these issues, admitting that they are in our own backyards, it will be easier for a struggling child to get some help. Ideally, we can all begin to be kinder and more supportive of each other.
In My Backyard is brought to you by the Guidance Center, a children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California. In My Backyard is produced by Tricia Costales and Matthew Murray. Thank you to J. Vincent B. for original music. All other music licensed through Soundstripe. Thank you to our listeners and supporters. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Subscribe to In My Backyard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.